Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of 2 for 1 podcast, brought to you by Anchor and In the Lane, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast. My OCD is killing me and I wish that number was 10th. And if we could just end this show, Sean, and start a new one and just make that the 10th episode, I think that's the way we got to go here.
Are you like the weird person that when you're in a car, it has to be on a certain number, it has to be like an even number?
I hate that you know me that well, because yes, I also do the ice cube thing.
What is that?
It has to be an even amount of ice cubes in my cup. So if I'm at a restaurant, it's what it is, right? I'm not going to make a big deal about it. But if I'm at my house and I go to my ice maker, I'm taking an even amount of ice out of the freezer to put into my cup.
I feel like we've just taken a turn into, it's sort of like feeling the heat. It's like an Alana and Michael thing. I don't know who's Alana and who's Michael, but this is getting weird. Like it's swerving in and out of basketball and like personal touches and just, I'm going to let, you know what? I'm going to be Alana because I run this shit, you know? And sorry, Michael, but my impression from the pod so far is Alana runs that shit. So shout out to Alana.
I just want to say Sean brought this out organically. We've had no feel the heat talk on between us. But
if you don't listen to it, check it out. It's a good pod.
Yeah, I feel the heat's a great pod. All right. What's up, guys? So the WNBA has selected its Olympic team. And me and you both have had eventful weeks, right? So we haven't had time to really sit down and watch too many NBA games. Got a good gist of what's going on. The Connecticut Sun are still really freaking good. And so are the Seattle Storm, who have two representatives on that team. But what I really, let me go through the roster really quickly. So we got Sue Bird, Tina Charles, Collier from the Lynx, Skylar Diggins-Smith, Fouls, Chelsea Gray, Brittany Griner, Jewel Lloyd, Brianna Stewart, Deanna Taurasi, Asia Wilson. I mean, star-studded cast, right? They did seem to take some of the veteran USA basketball players as opposed to some of the newer stars. I wonder, as a coach, Sean, when you're putting together a national team and it's kind of on a shorter scale, right? Like we got to get these players ready to play with each other a little quicker. Do you tend to lean towards the vets as opposed to younger people in that group?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's also the factor that a lot of these girls and on the boys side also are moving up through USA basketball. They have, you know, the U17, U16 teams that play in these world championships. So a lot of these players move up through it. And that's more of a recent thing, more so than these veterans. You know, some of these players are reaching 40. I think the oldest
Sue is 40 years old.
Yeah, I thought so. So, you know, that's an extreme veteran. That's UD OG status.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a cool thing that, you know, not just men and women's Olympic teams, they don't play a ton of minutes. You're looking at 20 something minutes. It's not that much strain on the body. And so, especially the women who will dominate throughout this whole tournament, you have an opportunity to really shine a few of these veterans for their last ride. They're not going to be playing when they're 44 in the next Olympics. If this show is still going on episode 410, just for you, an even number, you know, we can debate that, but I doubt, you know, in 4 years of those girls, it'll be time to move it over to the next group and they'll still be strong. But I like that they give, you know, one more shine to these veteran players.
I think the only thing that's taken Sue Bird out of this damn game is if a coaching spot opens up for her. I mean, her game is they're so good. The Seattle Storm themselves are just so good and she's so great for them. I wanted to just touch on Sue being 40 and Deanna Taurasi is 39. When I was trying to process that in my head, that these two super veterans are still leading Olympic teams, I mean, that amps me the hell up. These women are achieving their dreams and sustaining their dreams now into their 40s, breaking all kinds of new ground. And it amped me up when I realized that.
And they're not there just on name. They're there on their ability also. I mean, they also have great names, but they can still play even at that age.
Yeah, Deanna Taurasi, I think, is, you know, she leads the league in scoring. for all time, right? Like she's the career scorer leader. So, and she is maintaining that position. Like she's still scoring tons of buckets at 39, and Sue is still effective as hell officiating offense. Like she's great. So, but obviously like the two standouts, Sarah Brianna and Aja, who are going to just absolutely wreak havoc. It's going to be disgusting.
You know, speaking of Asia Wilson, we talked about this a little bit before the show, and over the weekend I was at a pretty good AAU tournament in Spooky Nook, Pennsylvania. The area is not called Spooky Nook, but the venue is called Spooky Nook. And I saw, she'll be a rising senior, 2022 class, girl that could not have been, she's not 6 foot, 5'10 probably. Mm-hmm. And just off of one step, off of 2 feet, jump up and grab the rim. And we mentioned this earlier, and the young lady was from Virginia. I honestly don't know what her name is, but you know, the women's game is changing. It's evolving in a lot of different ways. And we, you know, Tony, you said before the show, you think that there could be around 10 girls in the WNBA that can dunk the ball in the near future.
Yeah. If you give it 4 years, you look at the players in college right now and the people coming out of high school, me and you both like a couple high school players. There's in 4 years, I see 10 dunkers.
And the basket didn't get lower and we didn't add trampolines. It's just the evolution of women's basketball is growing. And credit to that is probably a lot to Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi and getting girls interested at an earlier age. But that's just amazing. Even as a girls coach, and I've seen Asia Wilson play in high school, it's unreal. I don't know what you do about that.
Yeah, and special shout outs to Deladon too. Like these players that are pushing the narrative still, signing with Kevin Durant's boardroom and being an active part of that and pushing out. Like, look at the growth that they generated. I mean, the WNBA is more popular. I've seen so many WNBA podcasts this year.
And did you see the thing Jordan just added a lot of ladies to his brand?
He's 11, I think, is the number. Yeah.
It's just very cool to see. It's very organic the way that everything has grown up over the last 20 or so years with women's basketball. All right, let's transition into our next topic. So looking back at the past week, really the past 2 weeks since we didn't have a show last week, and summarizing what happened in the second round. So let's start close to my home and close to your former home. The Philadelphia 76ers were beat by the Atlanta Hawks.
Yes.
4-3.
Yes.
In tragic fashion.
Yes.
People burning Ben Simmons jerseys all over town. I haven't left the house in 2 days. Windows and blinds shut. The doors are locked. I'm afraid. I want to run out to the corner store, you know, get a soda, get a hoagie or something. And it's just not worth it at this point. I need everything to pass over and then I will go. What did you think about the Sixers and Hawks series?
Well, I have never personally had so much from game five to game six to game seven. I've never been so personally vested in a series that the Miami Heat were not involved in. And I've liked a lot of teams over the years. I've never disliked the Sixers more in my life than I have this year for some specific reason. Maybe it's because Trae Young is playing them and I appreciate the Hawks, but I wanted them to lose in six. Like I know there are some people who were rooting for seven just for the tragic. I wanted them out and gone, but dear God, was it so sweet for them to lose in game seven in like that fashion too. It was a beautiful thing.
And it's the way that it happened. Ben Simmons passing up the dunk, giving the ball to Tybull instead of dunking the ball. Embiid really carrying them, but then also coming up lame at the end, turning the ball over and missing shots. And Tobias Harris shrinking like he always does. And it's just a lot to really digest with them. And they were the number one seed. And if you're looking at them for next year, they need changes. They cannot run it back and expect that team to do what they did this year.
No, and I think the assumption, the hyperbole reaction is trade Ben Simmons, but it's that team could still structure around Ben and Joel, but Ben's got to move to a more natural scoring position. His mentality just has to change. And I think if you just move him closer to the rim, maybe he'll score more aggressively.
Yeah. And I think he needs a change of scenery. I just think
a fresh start,
mental aspect of being in Philadelphia. They've lost trust in him. Anyone that was remaining on the Simmons bandwagon has evacuated, and he's still a good player. I mean, he's not a good player for Miami either, but certain situations, if you build the roster, not necessarily around him, because I don't know if he is that alpha guy, but he can be a complimentary piece. That's a great passer, a great defender. He's huge, but you have to develop him. And he's still only 24. That's the one thing to keep in mind. He's 24 years old.
And so that's the one thing that, like, for me, I don't want to put him in the box of he's a terrible player yet.
Sure. And I think even angry Philadelphia fans realize that, but it's time for him. That time's done. He has to go. But what do you get for him?
It's an impossible situation. And that's what makes his valuation so tough. Like, don't let I'm being nice to Ben Simmons, the human and the player. I hate him. I don't want him on anywhere near the Heat. like Ben Simmons, the athlete, I don't want to touch, but he's 24 years old. He obviously has an elite skill set defensively. He has all the tools, and he's probably three or four. I think he's overrated as a passer. Just the where people place him in that first three spots, right? I can name three players right now that are better passers than Ben Simmons, but that's an elite skill he has too. So Kevin Love, Ben Simmons, Kevin Love straight up.
So what is that on the dollar? Like 30 cents on the dollar?
I don't know. I really don't know, because I don't know what Kevin Love is either. I was certain that Blake Griffin was cooked. Certain. I watched him play in Detroit. He couldn't move. And now he's dunking on Giannis. So I mean, I don't know.
And I'm pretty sure after Kevin Love gets on the Team USA bus with Bam, then he'll be coming to Miami, right? It was here first. We brought it up first.
I actually really like his game in Miami with our players right now. The problem is, though, I don't know what for Kevin to come here, it's a buyout, right? You'd assume.
I mean, that would be best case scenario. Trying to make the salaries match, you're going to have to use that team option of Dragic and or Iguodala, and it still doesn't – the pieces don't necessarily fit very well in a trade.
No. So I don't know what the team's going to look like by the time we get anywhere close to buyout deadline or even the beginning of the season. So the team right now, Kevin Love fits if he's cheap, but I don't know what the team's going to look like. So,
yeah, I agree. All right, let's move it over to the next series in the East. The Bucks were able to upset the Nets. Another game seven in that East semifinals. A great finish in that game seven. What was your reaction to that?
I was upset. I mean, I you want to watch greatness play for as long as possible. That's like my driving function. And I want to see Kevin Durant play basketball into the playoffs as deep as you can go. The man has, you know, feet as long as my arm. And he acknowledged that. And it's a little sad that, you know, his toes weren't behind that line and that the game couldn't have ended that way. But if you don't come out of this game just absolutely adoring Kevin Durant, I got nothing for you. I got absolutely nothing for you, because that man is just, he's greatness personified. It's awesome to watch.
I was actually watching the end of that game at Caesars Sportsbook, and the reaction when he hit that shot was unreal. It had to be like the second most live event. Not being at the game, that place just went nuts and exploded. The other reaction that was almost as amazing was, what the hell was Brooke Lopez thinking when he caught the inbounds pass the play before?
But, and here's my thing about that. Why is that? Why is that play drawn up for Brooke in the corner? Is it to then pass to a cutter, or is he supposed to be taking that shot? And if he is, why was the pick to set him loose so fucking weak?
Everything about it is just weird. And you want to point fingers at Bud, which is probably the person that deserves the most blame in that. Because like you said, if you're running that play to get him the ball in the corner, what the hell? Don't even use the timeout. Just whatever shot they were going to get on that broken possession, just go with it. But if he's trying to make a pass, it's going to be a rush shot. And it's like, did he even know the situation? Because the better thing would have been to just throw the ball at the rim. Maybe it hits the rim more time, you know, maybe another second and a half, 2 seconds come off the clock. There was just a whole lot to unpack with, you'll never know the truth. And I think Bud, he took the blame for it, which is probably the right thing to do, not put the blame on Brooke, not knowing the situation. But whatever happened, that's, I hate to say it, it's Bud being Bud, because that did not really work out in their favor. It ended up working in their favor, but it didn't, it shouldn't have.
It shouldn't have. And I don't understand. I just can't understand having Brooke come off a, if he's going to come off of a weak pick like that, just have Giannis run the same action. Let Giannis take the corner shot. He's huge. He'll shoot it over somebody. I didn't get it. But as far as the Bucks go, I had to, again, embrace the hatred of Bucks Twitter. As soon as the game was over, everybody had me bookmarked and sent their DMs. And there's a couple people who went live on the timeline with me, and that's okay. I'll eat some crow. I mean, granted, you have to wake up in a city where your most prized possession is a bronze statue of the Fonz. But I'll eat some crow. It is good seeing Giannis continue his run into the playoffs. I don't hate the Bucks like a lot of Heat fans hate the Bucks. I would have really, really loved to see Kyrie, Harden, and KD continue to push.
Just to be clear for Bucks Twitter, do you want to update them on your new Twitter handle before we get too far into the show?
I was going to do this at the end, but yeah. So my new Twitter handle, Bucks Twitter, for you to come at me personally, is Tony Schwartz NBA, all one word. You can find me there. Make sure to send your most elaborate hate messages. I know you'll be hyped up on beer and cheese because that's all your city owns. So you'll be constipated and angry and ready to throw down.
I would shotgun like 3 Miller Lights before you DM Tony. That's the perfect time to send a thoughtful message on his analysis of the Bucks. So before we get too much hatred, let's move out west. The Suns were able to sweep the Nuggets. So that happened almost a week ago now, but we didn't have a show last week. What was your reaction to that series? Very surprising.
I did, but didn't we call it though? Weren't we unsure of how the Nuggets were going to generate good offense?
Yeah, and I just couldn't. I was giving Jokic a game because he's so dominant. I thought 4-1, but to sweep them and dominate them the way they did, that was pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't know how – I don't want to sound – because in the next series, I was fucking loud wrong. So I don't want to sound like, you know, the know-it-all guy. But I just couldn't figure out how the Nets were going to generate offense against the Suns. They have great perimeter defenders. Internally, Ayton is good enough to match up to slow Jokic down a little bit. And honestly, I just kept running it through my head, like trying to figure out how maybe they would attack the Suns, and nothing showed up of any value. And that's what happened in the series too. They just couldn't generate enough points to beat that team. And when they get hot from three too, man, the Suns are a problem.
Yeah. The point you made about Ayton, I mean, his stock is flying through the roof. I mean, Booker's exploding. He's, you know, and most people knew about Booker, but Ayton, there were some doubts, and he's really proven himself over those first two series. Mm-hmm. Obviously, AD was hurt, but he did well against him. And now against Jokic, the MVP, did well against him. In this next series, it's going to be interesting because the Clippers really don't have a big man that they use. They play small ball. And how can he move his feet better than Rudy Gobert did? And, be able to defend without fouling, defend on the perimeter, and still defend the basket. It's going to be interesting. But I think the Suns have the edge in that one. We'll get to that later. But you want to move into Clippers and Jazz, where you – I think we both were surprised about this. I had the Jazz also. Clippers were able to win 4-2.
Yeah, but you might have had them, but I was so loud wrong. I think I gave him a gentleman sweep out of courtesy in my prediction. I can't really put it together why the Clippers were just able to go down 2 again and come back in such a glorious fashion and take the Jazz. But with the Kawhi injury and having Paul George step up, I mean, I don't know what kind of slander he's answering or how sustainable his play has been or can be, but man, Paul George is really fucking good at basketball.
Yeah, he's definitely erasing that pandemic P label that he earned last year.
Yeah.
You know, the only explanation I have is the Jazz were up 2-0. Am I correct about that? It was 2-0. Mm-hmm. The Clippers won the next four.
Yeah.
They were up 2-0 when I went to Utah, and they lost the next four games while I was there. So I think I actually cursed them. It may be, I might have to be the one to take the blame. It's not Quinn Snyder. It's not Rudy Gobert. It's not Donovan Mitchell's injury. It's my fault. So I'll accept
and that. And Donovan Mitchell's injury is something. I have to say, though, there was a moment early in this series where I was touting Donovan Mitchell publicly because he looked like he has figured out that thing that NBA players figure out where it's like how to get to space and draw fouls. And getting to his spot for the shot, but also drawing the foul, getting the defender into a bad position. So I really, really thought this was his like coming out show that he is a superstar game. And he just reverted back into sometimes chucking that three ball when the double comes. He would see the double team coming, and where in the last series, he would back that out maybe a little bit and try to split it or set up a pass to a teammate. When the double started coming, he went to his pull up, and that was a detriment for them.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was hard without Mike Conley and his injury. The Jazz definitely can point to injuries, but the Clippers were without Kawhi. I mean, so yep.
when you
balance that out and you win in six as the underdog, that's pretty convincing to me. All right, so let's move into our next segment. Before we do any of the East and West Finals predictions or NBA Finals predictions, we want to do sort of a fun segment here. We're going to take the final four teams that are left, so the Hawks, the Bucks, the Suns, and the Clippers, and we're going to draft teams. So here are the rules. We're going to do a snake draft. Tony's going to go first. We're each going to draft five starters plus a sixth man. It's a positionless lineup, so we're not forced to take a center or a point guard or anything like that. And the goal is we're playing a series this next week. So it's not something like where if you take an aging veteran that it's a bad move over a younger guy. And only players remaining on these four teams are eligible. And we'll throw in the caveat that someone like Chris Paul is not going to have COVID, or if Kawhi is injured, we're going to erase all that. Everybody's healthy for this. Okay.
Okay.
So five players plus a six man will snake draft. So you start with the first pick, then I take two, then you take two, and so on.
Hey, guys. It's an editor's note. You're probably going to hear these every now and again from us because we're not perfect and we fuck up. And in this case, I screwed up pretty bad. Sean told me before we started this draft that there was going to be no injury rule. Everybody is healthy and operating at the best of their ability. I didn't hear him, or I didn't pay attention. So when the opportunity came for me to pick Kawhi, I did not, and instead went with Chris Middleton. And that throws off most of my team, but I still think I have a pretty good team, and I have a lot of shooting and a lot of offensive capability, but I deserve to take every single L that you throw at me. All right, let's get back to the draft.
Very difficult. I am going back and forth in my head. Let's go Devin Booker one for the first pick of the 2-for-1 podcast snake draft.
All right. And with you going Devin Booker, and since I said injuries are not going to matter in this case, I am going to go with Kawhi Leonard. And I'm going to go with Giannis.
Ah, you bastard.
We have arms on arms right now.
And I have to now, we are playing chess, you understand. I have to now try and counter you as best as possible. I need some length and some scoring ability as well. Give me Chris Middleton.
And you have one more pick.
Oh, right. Snake draft. Trae Young.
Hmm. If you let me get Trey, it was over. I was going to pick like Solomon Hill, a couple other guys, Giannis Antetokounmpo. All right. So my next pick, man,
tough.
Okay. I'm going to go CP3.
Uh-huh.
And with your sixth man.
Right. So I we're still drafting teams at this point, and we have to compete in a series. So give me John Collins.
Good pick.
And give me a second. Give me, this might be a surprise. Give me Jay Crowder.
Ooh, all right. So Jay Crowder. So with my last pick, my last starter, I guess you maybe forgot about him, or maybe you just wanted to get bigger, but I'm going to go Drew Holiday.
Yeah, I just wanted to get bigger.
Okay. And I'm going to pick my sixth man here. So, for my sixth man, I am going to go with, I have maybe, well, I guess I'm okay. I'm going to go DeAndre Ayton. So you have your last pick, your sixth man.
Man, I was really, really hoping I could have got Drew as my sixth man. give me Herter.
I love it. I actually thought about him. That's what I was thinking about.
Give me Herter.
Tony's roster is Devin Booker, Chris Middleton, Trae Young, John Collins, Jay Crowder, and Kevin Herter. And my roster is Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, CP3, Paul George, Drew Holiday, and DeAndre Ayton. So I'm just kind of looking.
I like your team.
You do? Okay.
I like your team. I because if we're looking at matchups, Trae and Chris are on each other, and I might tilt that in my favor. I'm tilting that in my favor in my head. I have to play Crowder on Giannis, or Crowder and Collins will take turns on Giannis. Middleton on Kawhi, maybe for the length. But then the problem becomes Paul George. And then
there's Drew's, a lot of length.
Yeah.
So we ended up taking four Suns, mm-hmm. three Hawks, three Bucks, and two Clippers. Just for those keeping track at home. And so as we use that, you know, just kind of looking at, you know, essentially what this becomes is the top 12, in a way, the top 12 players remaining. And, you know, you could argue, I think DeAndre Ayton might not be a top 12 player. Herter or Crowder might not be a top 12 player, but this is our draft and we can do whatever the hell we want. So
that's right.
You know, as we use this information and now move forward to make some predictions, looking forward to the East Finals. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. It has not started yet. East Finals prediction. I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. So I think that the Bucks are probably taking this series. I don't feel really comfortable about that decision. I think the Suns, in order to win, or not the Suns, sorry. I think that the Hawks, in order to win, have to be a very, very consistent three-point shooting team. And some of Trae Young's early struggles in this series, it kind of looked like he was a little tired. And the distance that he played, the minutes that he put on himself in the last series, Atlanta's not used to going this deep in the playoffs. And it kind of just feels right, like the time is right for the Bucks. You know what I mean? It, like how the time felt for Miami when they were going against OKC. It just feels like this is their time. They're on their push. The guys have been in this position before in the playoffs where, you know, they're getting bounced. They're ready to win. Chris Middleton needs to show up a little bit more than what he's been doing, though, in order to get there. But I think I'm taking the Bucks. The stars feel aligned for them to come out of the East.
You want to put a game on it? Bucks in how many?
Man, I feel so uncomfortable with picking them in the first place. Bucks in six.
And I'm going to go with the Bucks also. And I agree with basically everything you said. I'm going to go Bucks in five. And I also feel uncomfortable because you start to get the vibes of last year's Heat team where, you know, every series it was like, well, we probably won't make it past the Bucks. Then we probably won't make it past the Celtics. And we just kept proving over and over that we were better than people thought we were. I think the length that Milwaukee has is going to give a lot of trouble to Trey because I think they have multiple defenders they can throw at him. The size that they have around the basket. I know they just went against Joel Embiid, who is arguably the best post player in the world. But I think their ability to get in transition and run, Giannis's ability to get fouls on people, to defend, Middleton's ability to defend, you know, they have so many two-way guys. That's the thing I think about the Bucks. And then, you know, PJ Tucker, and they just have so many guys that I just don't know if this is the series for the Hawks.
I'm watching Drew Holiday just do absolute, like, just real devastation to that Hawks team. He's killing them as a defender.
If Drew Holiday can take Trae Young out of his game, he can't shut him down. He's too good of a player for that. But if he can limit him to, you know, 10 points, and I know he played bad in that game 7 and they still won, but if he takes Trae out of his game, how do the Hawks win?
Yeah, and I actually have some issue with that because I don't think he played bad. He just wasn't offensively pushing, right? Yeah. And like, I don't know if that's his job in this series. His energy is all defensive right now to me. I think that's Coach Bud making that decision. And at least that's what it looked like. I mean, they're not running actions for Drew at all. I can't remember a single action they ran for him where they got him a play.
No, it's so their half court offense is sometimes mind boggling in a way. But I'll tell you what, if the Hawks are hitting threes, it's a series.
Yep.
They're not hitting threes. Those long rebounds are going to turn into transition and the Bucks are going to be just dominant. I don't know what if they're not making threes, it's Bucks and four, maybe.
I really hope the Hawks kind of win. So you get your moment there.
Oh man. All right. Well, let's move out west. So talking about the Suns and the Clippers, as we record this, it is already Suns 1-0. The game is tonight as we record this, so we're not going to know that information yet, but let's roll with it. I'm going to go Suns in 6. I think that the Kawhi injury obviously hurts. I think that the Suns are most likely to get back CP3 in game 3. I think they take care of business and get up 2-0. That is where Ty Lue gets very comfortable, it seems like. You know, Pat Riley says a playoff series doesn't start until somebody wins on the opponent's home court. And for Ty Lue, a playoff series doesn't start until he gets down 2-0. Like, he hasn't even prepared anything yet. He just waits to get down 2-0, and then it's time for him to shine. So, you know, I think the Clippers have shown the resolve to fight back. But, again, I just think it's the Suns' time. They're playing so well. They're very balanced. They have a lot of pieces. Devin Booker is playing as good as anybody in the world right now. So, my pick is Suns in 6.
They miss Chris Paul in that first game. And there's no one better at attacking the mid-range than him. And that combination that they have going where they have a big screen for a wing off ball and then the big cuts to the basket and the ball handler can occupy that space across the free throw line going left to right or right to left, depending on where they run the action. Mm-hmm. That and then they pull up there. It's a one dribble pull up after in the wing. It's so deadly. There's nothing the Clippers can do to stop it. They could run that action 50 times. And there's no big that the Clippers have that can do anything with that. They have to play drop because of the bigs they have. And Zubac isn't athletic enough to come up and cover that shot. So I'm with you, man. I'm saying Suns in 6 too. And I'm only saying Suns in 6 out of pure, pure respect for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Because from what I understand, the Kawhi could be back this series. And if he is, I just want to give him the space. So Suns in 6.
Yeah, I did hear that also, that depending on the grade of the injury, that there's a chance he comes back. And if he does, I still think I'd take the Suns, but you know, props to him for fighting back, and he's a warrior. So you know that he's going to give it everything, just like James Harden did last series, and it almost got him there. So, all right. So we both took the Suns. We both took the Bucks. NBA Finals, Milwaukee and Phoenix. David Stern would be rolling over. I mean, this is not what he wants. He wants big markets. But it's a hell of a basketball matchup. If you love basketball, these two teams, that's a hell of a matchup. So what do you see in that series, and who would you pick?
Man, I think in this one, there's going to be such an intense battle between Chris Paul and Drew Holiday. Those two guys are really would go at it, and the basketball would be immense. I mean, you're going to see some of the more intelligent ball being played. The Suns would really have to dig deep in their bag, and maybe the coaching matchup is what separates these two teams. But when you get to the playoffs, usually the best player on the court is the team that takes the wins. I think I'm taking the Bucks.
All right, we won't make you put a game on this.
It's very weird because I also see the scoring potential for the Suns, and this is based solely on, I just feel like it's the Bucks' time and less about matchup and schematics. It just feels right for the Bucks to make this run.
And we could do and eventually we will do a long pod on just whatever matchup this is. But if it was Bucks Suns, you just go down the matchups. Lopez and Ayton is a great matchup. Mm-hmm. You have Jay Crowder most likely going back against Giannis again. Mm-hmm. You have probably Middleton guarding Devin Booker, CP3 and Drew Holiday. I mean, those are just great matchups. I mean,
awesome.
I mean, that's. And I know I didn't ask you to give me a game, but I think it goes seven. I think it's a very even matchup. You hope that both teams are at full strength, no injuries impact anything. I think that is best case scenario. I would, you know, the Hawks story is great. If the Clippers can somehow get through, if Kawhi comes back and is healthy, that would be cool too. But I think this is the series that I want to see. It is the favorite in Vegas to be the series. The Bucks are actually the favorite to win the title right now, which is very interesting. And the Suns are second. So it's, you know, it's pretty wild how quickly that shifted. But I'm going to go with the Suns. I want to be different than you, number one, so we can't be on the same side. But I did record earlier today with Norris on our pod, and I picked the Suns. And he actually had the Clippers, and now he has shifted over, and he's taking the Bucks. So you're on the same side as the NBA guy, and I'm the, you know, outside opinion, I guess. But that's, you know, I really hope we get to see that. I would love to see that series, and I think it would be a long series.
You feel like if the Hawks make it to the finals, that whatever team they play, they lose against. Like, I don't feel super confident about them playing either one of the matchups. So I want the Bucks. I actually, like I said, I don't hate Milwaukee. I have no issues with the team themselves. So it's one of these things where I'm trying to make as much as an unbiased pick as possible. And it's not even really Giannis. Giannis is swaying it, but that's all. Like, man, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday give you so many options. And Drew can actually be used as a scoring piece in that series too, which we haven't seen. I don't know. It'll be a beautiful game to watch. Though they're gonna everybody's spacing each other out. The bigs going to the corners and playing and running the transition. Like, that'd be a good game. All right, so Sean, we've made it to the end of our ninth episode, and this is my time to shine. All right. I am picking the fake imaginary sponsor this week for the 2-for-1 podcast, and we're going with none other than Cafe Bustelo. Cafe Bustelo has single-handedly charged all of my success in life. I wake up in the morning, have a cup of Cafe Bustelo, I go out and start my day. Okay? There's a kid with a trombone that I have to avoid every single day going to work, and I do it because of Cafe Bustelo, and Sean pulls out a whole box. This is the angle that I've been pursuing for the last week. Cafe Bustelo, if your representatives want to talk to us, we are open.
I know this is not a visual podcast, obviously, but I have a box full of Casa Bucello. Yeah, we need sponsors. And no one has picked up so far. We've tried. We're a great podcast. We're good people most of the time.
Most of the time.
Yeah, you know, 30% of the time. All right, Tony, great episode. I appreciate it. And guys, make sure you tune in, like, subscribe. That helps us so much. Leave comments, good or bad, whatever you think. Talk about how great my team is compared to Tony's this week. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.